degrees. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square in Urbana, a lifestyle center which includes unique and independently owned specialty shops, including Art Mart and Art Mart Toys, unique baby gifts, international galleries, and calico jewelry.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our technical director is Jason Croft. This week, we're exploring where the candidates in Illinois' 52nd state Senate race stand on a number of issues of key interest to voters. When it comes to education, Democratic incumbent Mike Frerichs and Republican challenger John Bamboneck have different ideas about how to fund schools, but find common ground over how to evaluate them. Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers reports.
More than 60% of funding for K-12 education in Illinois comes from local dollars, the bulk of that money from property taxes. But Champaign Democrat Mike Frerichs says relying on property taxes creates major funding gaps for schools statewide.
The biggest problem I see with our education system is the huge disparities between the wealthiest school districts and the poorest school districts.
Senator Frerichs says all students should have equal access to a quality education, regardless of where they live. Take, for example, Armstrong School District 225, with one high school campus in Vermilion County. According to the State Board of Education, the school received $825,000 in property taxes last year. In contrast, New Trier Township High School District 203, with two campuses in Cook County, received some $80 million.
The quality of education you're likely to receive as a child is radically different depending on what town you're born into or what street you're born on. And that's just unfair. I think it's a moral problem we need to address.
Frerichs says there should be a greater emphasis on education funding based on a per-pupil statewide average and less reliance on property taxes to support schools. Champaign Republican John Bamboneck believes property taxes are a more stable funding source for education than income or sales taxes. But he would ultimately like to fund schools differently.
The funding should follow the child. We're funding a child's education. We should stop looking at, okay, we need to fund this bureaucracy or that bureaucracy. We should fund a child's education, and that funding should travel with the child wherever they go in whatever educational system they're in, whether it's charter or so on.
Bamboneck also thinks school administrators make too much money. He says there might be opportunities to trim salaries to better support education. Funding education is one thing, but assessing it is another. With the passage of No Child Left Behind during the George W. Bush administration, a greater emphasis on standardized testing developed to evaluate school success. The measure seeks to bring every student to a single national standard by 2014. But Senator Frerichs says we shouldn't connect student performance on individual tests with school funding.
You see a lot of teaching towards the test. It's not necessarily concerned with education and expanding children's minds and their ability to learn and process information, but the ability of children to do very well in this one test because their funding is so reliant on it.
Bamboneck agrees No Child Left Behind hasn't been effective, but his concern is about the federal government gaining more control over the assessment of teacher-student performance.
Teaching the test is a means of accountability. Accountability is a great thing, but accountable to who? Our schools need to be accountable to their local communities and parents.
And that's where these two men agree. They both feel teachers and parents should have a greater say in what goes on in Illinois classrooms. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
Our coverage on the 52nd state Senate race wraps up tomorrow with a report on the candidates' views about the role of government. For a comprehensive election guide, visit will.illinois.edu/election. The Republican running in the 48th state Senate district is Decatur Mayor Mike McElroy. His opponent in the race is Democrat Andy Menar, who previously served as the chief of staff for Senate President John Cullerton. Illinois Public Radio's Sean Crawford sat down with McElroy to talk about issues in the campaign. McElroy says the state's tax code needs to change.
We cannot keep taxing the people and businesses in this state. That is a huge part of the problem we're in right now. This is all about jobs when it comes right down to it. And we don't have people knocking down their doors to get into Illinois. They don't, you know, we have got too many restrictions. We've got too many license problems. We've got, you know, you got to have a friend that has a trucking company that gets a call every week from Indiana. Come on over here. And he could save a ton of money. And why he doesn't, I don't know, but I'm sure glad that he doesn't. He's a Decatur person. And he has 400 trucks on the road. That's a lot of revenue for our city. That's a lot of paychecks for our city. So I realize that, decisions like that are not easy to make. I will tell you, when we took over the current council, our rainy day fund was gone. In 2.25 years, we're back to about $5 million in that fund. And it was cuts. But it was cuts that were made that weren't noticeable. It wasn't police and fire. It wasn't over the backs of our workers. But what it certainly was, when someone retired, we looked. And I want to say, when somebody retired, because there seems to be people that listen to different things and they automatically say you're cutting jobs that weren't needed, they weren't replaced. A fire truck that cost close to $1 million. You're telling me we can't get another 2 years out of it, no more than that goes? We had our fire chief and his fire department that said, yeah, we can. Let's go. And we worked together to get things done.
Higher education at the state level taken a lot of funding hits over the past decade or so, and we have seen tuition go up to kind of offset that. What's your thought when it comes to paying for higher education and maybe some ways the state could improve that?
Well, I would have to say, for our son Matt, we got in the Illinois program, the college program. So we put his money away when he was in fourth and fifth, sixth grade. We were very fortunate. I have to be honest with you. That part, I don't know. I mean, I agree totally with the premise of the question, but I just don't know where you're going to find that, because there are so many places that need the dollars. But you know, and you could have six guys come in here and all of us would say something different about where we think the money should, you know, be cut. And but I am firmly that I don't want it to be cut into the education. I firmly want people to go to college, graduate from Illinois, stay in Illinois, start businesses in Illinois, which once again goes back to my whole premise that jobs are the deal. We need to have jobs, and we need to have job creators want to stay in Illinois.
Well, the state of Illinois also made some cuts this year, done again as budgetary moves that some people say are going to hit certain populations a little too hard. And these are Medicaid cuts the state made for the health care program that impacts the poor, the elderly, the disabled, many of them who need to help affording their prescription drugs. How do you balance that out?
That again, is one that I've had many discussions on. Medicaid needs to be there. We talked to some nursing home people and the stories that they have, and the cuts, and then the charges for bed taxes, and you know, two times in the last 3 years, the state's put on more taxes for bed taxes, those type of things. You have to look at those, and you have to wonder. We do not do a good job of taking care of our most vulnerable people, and I believe that we have to do that. Now, I really wish I could sit here right now and tell you a way to do it. There isn't, but I can tell you that that's a priority of mine, to try to find the solution, or as good a solution as, and work very, very hard towards that.
Decatur Mayor Mike McElroy is the Republican nominee in the 48th state Senate race. He's running against Democrat Andy Menar, who we'll hear from tomorrow. To hear an extended interview with Mike McElroy, visit will.illinois.edu.
And now, a few words in praise of an unlikely cut of meat, the heart of a cow.
It's a rough, tough, angry muscle surrounded by clean fats, which means it tastes deeply beefy.
And foodies say delicious. Beef heart, a dish that may surprise you. Later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Swires Land and Management Company, Danville; EAGCO Incorporated, Fairmount; and Cannon Farms, Camargo. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 25th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of the novelist Anne Tyler, born in Minneapolis, 1941. Her family moved to various communes, and she grew up mostly in the mountains of North Carolina, where they raised milk goats and grew their own food. She learned folk crafts and traditional music. When they moved the family to Raleigh, she was sent to public school, and she had never used a telephone. Her feet were calloused from going without shoes. Ann Tyler said of her childhood, "I learned to be alone and to entertain myself by imagining, and when I left the commune, I looked at the regular world from an unusually distant vantage point." One summer, she was working as a teenager on a tobacco farm, and she found a book by Eudora Welty at the library, including the short story The Wide Net, and it changed her life, particularly one line of the story, which was, "Edna Earle could sit and ponder all day on how the little tail of the sea got through the L in a Coca-Cola sign." And Tyler said it was a kind of revelation. "I knew dozens of people like Edna Earle, small town, ordinary. I just didn't know you could write about them." She went to Duke, she fell in love, got married to an Iranian-born medical student, moved with him to Montreal, started working on a novel. Her first novel came out in 1964, If Morning Ever Comes. She was 22. A year later, another, The Tin Can Tree. Moved to Baltimore, 1965, where she's lived ever since. Most of Ann Tyler's novels are set there. She said it's a city with grit and sort of a feisty spirit to it. I think it's a very funny city, and I love it. But any Baltimorean can tell you I'm not a real Baltimorean. Ann Tyler, who is never interested in being in the spotlight, doesn't do book tours or author appearances, stopped reading reviews of her books 30 years ago, gave her first in-person interview in more than 30 years earlier this year. Her most recent book is The Beginner's Goodbye. And it was on this day in 1400 that Geoffrey Chaucer died. He'd spent his life working as a civil servant. He'd been the comptroller of customs. He kept the books on export taxes for wool, sheepskin, and leather that went through the port of London. Lost his job in 1386, and that was about when he began writing the Canterbury Tales. When he died 14 years later, the tales were unfinished. His plan was to write about 120 of them, but in the manuscript Chaucer left behind, there are just 24. Here's a poem for today by Robert Frost, an uncollected poem from 1921. "To prayer I think I go to prayer, along a darkened corridor of woe and down a stair, in every step of which I am abased. I wear a